Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Darren Beatty from Revolver.News joins us to talk about the TikTok pill and also a color revolution happening in Israel. And then we have Robert Barnes, Barnes Law, joins to talk about Trump indictment news. Alvin Bragg, is there an insurrection happening in Nashville? And the TikTok bill. And finally, we talk about reparations. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us is Darren Beatty. He runs one of the most important websites, Revolver.News. You guys should visit it every day. I certainly do. Darren, welcome back to the program. Darren, I want to talk about Israel. You have a very unique take on that. But first, I just want to get your thoughts on this Restrict Act that we've been talking about that more Republicans than Democrats are sponsoring. And I just want to remind our audience what Republicans are sponsoring this. John Boozman from Arkansas, Mike Crapo from Idaho, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, Tom Tillis from North Carolina, Chuck Grassley from Iowa, Kevin Cramer from North Dakota, Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia, Mitt Romney from Utah, Susan Collins from Maine, Dan Sullivan from Alaska, Jerry Moran from Kansas, Deb Fisher from Nebraska, and John Thune from South Dakota. Darren, your thoughts on the Restrict Act?
Well, you have a bill that's supported by Lindsey Graham, Tom Tillis, and Mitt Romney, you know you're in for a beauty, as they say. The Restrict Act, what can we say about it? Well, first thing to know is that it's a Trojan horse type bill. What it's being packaged as is some kind of way to counteract the nefarious foreign communist-infused influence of TikTok, which is a natural sell. Everybody can get behind that. But what it actually is a Trojan horse and amounts effectively, I think the best description of it that I've heard is the Patriot Act for the internet. Even though the marketing is specifically tailored to TikTok, something that we all love to hate, the actual substance of the bill is very vague and it is no way limited to TikTok. It's vaguely constrained to technologies associated with quote unquote foreign adversaries, a flexible term that can be defined in any way that the Commerce Department wants it to be defined in, according to the vague language of the bill. And I think the contextual view here, the bird's eye view, what we need to understand about this is in an era of unprecedented, dangerous politicization of the national security state, we need to be especially wary of granting the national security state enhanced, unprecedented
power. I totally
powers.
Agree. Yes.
And that's the thing. But the thing is it's such a great marketing ploy. They take advantage of people's natural and entirely justified concern with and really revulsion toward Chinese influence and especially things like TikTok. And they say, look at all these bad things going on with TikTok, and use that as a pretext. Ironically, it's a dark irony, but use that as a pretext to impose internet restrictions mm-hmm. that actually make us a lot more like China.
That's what's so interesting.
Exactly. And there's one other point that I think is worth noting is the timing is interesting. Again, you'll have all of these politicians, none of whom who will speak up and speak out about, you know, the treatment of the January 6th prisoners, none of whom will speak out a bit again about hot button issues that directly affect the well-being of Americans. And all of a sudden, they're the Incredible Hulk when it comes to beating down TikTok. What an easy target. It's almost as though this is the rare occasion that the regime gives them permission to, you know, let your hair down a little bit. Now, you know, you're neutered 99% of the time. Here's the 1% where you get to play act as though you're actually tough and able to do something, because they'll go on all day about TikTok, but really it seems to be a consolation prize for the fact that they're entirely impotent when it comes to reining in the power and abuses of American tech companies such as Google, such as Facebook, such as Twitter, even after the improvements instituted by Elon. Overwhelmingly, the chief threat to American freedom on the internet and the chief manipulation impacting Americans' ability to process information happens through these American tech companies such as Google. But they're so powerful, they're so deeply integrated into the security state, as we learn over and over through the Twitter files revelations. These politicians are totally helpless in light of American big tech companies. And so all they can do is impotently point their fingers at TikTok. And to make matters worse, they're doing that in order to push forth a bill that would actually further restrict freedoms on the internet for American citizens. And all the while, during an era in which the national security state has proved most aggressive in politically attacking American citizens.
That's exactly right. I'm at a place now, Darren, where I cynically do not think it's possible to ban TikTok without also getting something awful alongside of it. It's just, we do not have the political precision. We do not have the, in my opinion, experts that I trust. And so I begrudgingly am at the place where I'd rather have to live with TikTok still existing than getting this Leviathan while, quote unquote, banning TikTok. And hilariously, Darren, you read the bill, there's no guarantee that TikTok would actually get banned. That's what's so hilarious.
Exactly.
About
no,
it.
That's the funny thing. What would actually happen if it get passed is they restrict our internet, and you know, half these people are probably on China's payroll anyway.
That's exactly right. And then they don't do it. Exactly. And then they'll say, oh, no, just kidding. But you know, Telegram we're going to ban because a lot of right wingers use it, and there's a Russian owner. Right? Rumble we're going to ban because it was founded in Canada. Twitter we're going to ban because the Saudis invested and Elon runs it. Right? You go through the list. So I think we're in harmony there, Darren. I hate to be so cynical about things, but the last bastion of our ability to challenge tyranny are some of these platforms, right? A free and open internet right now doesn't quite exist as it used to, but there's still a little, you know, Getter, Twitter, Telegram, Revolver. They would love nothing more than to be able to use the power of the state to restrict us. And that's literally the name of the bill. All right, Darren, shifting gears for a second here. Israel is in bedlam right now, but you're arguing that you think a color revolution is underway. First, remind our audience what a color revolution is. And are you arguing this is the Central Intelligence Agency? I would find that hard to believe.
Not necessarily, no. But I think what you see, which is amazing, I suggest everyone, if you haven't seen it, go look at some of the footage. It's a big deal what's going on in Israel. It's profoundly disruptive, and you have mass demonstrations in the streets. You have all the hallmark of what's termed color revolution, which refers to the mass mobilization of various interest groups, huge demonstrations in the streets. You can, you know, the paradigmatic examples are the Eastern European color revolutions, Ukraine color revolution, but you can also think of the mass demonstrations of, say, Black Lives Matter in the United States, which are organized according to the same principles. And you see something resembling this very closely in Israel. And actually, it's very interesting. And I don't know how deep of a dive we want to do, but there's so many layers to this, because the kind of superficial layer is, you know, there's just like we have, you know, here in the United States, you know, people don't know this, but before Revolver, before the White House, before being an academic, I worked for 2 years for the great Robert Bork, who was really a seminal figure.
You should have been on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, conservative jurisprudence. And one of his big issues was counteracting this problem of judicial activism. And even back then, which is now a much longer time ago than I care to even think about or express, even back then, as bad as things were in the United States, Israel had an extremely pronounced problem with judicial activism, left-wing activism, basically being implemented through the court system. And so Bibi and his allies have attempted to curtail the issue of sort of what they consider to be unjust, out of bounds encroachment of the judiciary through enhancing powers of the parliament. And this has, you know, naturally excited many different groups that are favorable to the left wing side in Israel. And so the superficial version of the clash is this question of the role of the judiciary versus parliament. There's an underlying tension there that I think is profound and has even to some degree shaped the political contours of the West more broadly. And that is the antagonism between Bibi Netanyahu and Ehud Barak. And they're just represent very different factions politically. Ehud Barak sort of aligned with the left, and the left, the left faction of the national security state, similarly in America, is most closely associated with the color revolution methodology of regime change. In the United States, you see this Atlanticist faction that happens to be particularly obsessed with Russia and Europe, and very closely aligned with this constellation of human rights NGOs. And one of its central figures would be somebody like George Soros, who has a very kind of strange relationship with Israel, certainly a deeply hostile to somebody like Netanyahu. And Netanyahu's sort of right-wing group and the Likud is sort of in some sense you know, internationalized. It's made alliances with various sort of nationalist movements throughout the West. And so in some way, the clash going on in Israel recapitulates the larger clash between sort of the nationalists and the left, between you know, people like you know, the late Sheldon Adelson and maybe somebody like George Soros at the sort of oligarch level, and then within the national security state, you know, it recapitulates the factions within it. One side being the sort of Atlanticist color revolution faction that's very much opposed to populist nationalist movements and has even appropriated the color revolution methodology in order to undermine nationalist regimes in the same way that they would a foreign adversary, including they've turned those tools inward, as you know, I've been talking about for a long time. And so the it might in a certain way, it's a localized political conflict in a country that's not America. So it can seem, oh, this isn't that important. There are some sort of analogies just on that political level to what's happening here, because, you know, the judicial activism problem and so forth. But I think the deeper significance of it is this factional aspect whereby sort of Bibi and his opposition within Israel sort of, again, recapitulate the dominant antagonisms politically that have shaped the Western political world for, you know, close to the past decade.
In closing here, do you think that elements of a color revolution strategy are currently at play domestically here in America?
Sure. Yes. I mean, you see it intensify at periods and sort of wane in other periods. It certainly intensifies around any presidential election season. In the United States, it typically takes the form of some kind of George Floyd type situation, a BLM type situation. And going all the way back to the time of, you know, the Trayvon Martin incident under under Obama, arguably even before that, but it really intensified there. People noticed the pattern. Well, something like this tends to happen, you know, leading up to an important election, and there are mass mobilized protests, and they seem to, you know, come out of nowhere and then kind of disappear just as conveniently. So that capacity to mobilize mass groups on a dime and then turn off the spigot more or less at will, although there is interesting blowback, it's not, you know, totally a top-down thing. It can get out of hand even from the standpoint of the people who organize it. But more or less, I'd say the BLM version of mass protest is the American manifestation of the color revolution model that we've deployed in a variety of foreign theaters.
I agree. Darren, Revolver.News, great job. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Look, are you concerned about the American K-12 education system? Are you worried about what your children and your grandchildren are learning or honestly not learning in school? If you answer yes, my friends at Hillsdale College have a free resource for you. Hillsdale College understands the importance of education to the future of our country. They're now offering 10 free print copies of their recent issue of Imprimis. It's titled Education as a Battleground, written by Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn. The special issue provides a factual account of the issues in the ongoing battle over education, explaining why parents and teachers, not unelected bureaucrats or activists, should guide what our children are learning. With Hillsdale College, you can make a difference in your community by distributing these copies of Imprimis at your church, local business, or even in your doctor's office. Do not miss this opportunity to arm yourself with the facts. Claim your 10 free copies of Education as a Battleground by visiting charlie4hillsdale.com. That's charlie4hillsdale.com. I love Hillsdale College. I'm an enthusiastic promoter of them. So check it out right now at charlie4hillsdale.com. Several topics to cover with the great Robert Barnes. Robert, welcome back to the program. So, Robert, I want to start by, you know, beginning to dive into here the issue that I think many people are concerned about in so many different ways, which is, well, actually, I want to start on a different one. There's a protest actually right now. I want to talk about the Restrict Act. I want to talk about the indictment. But there apparently, Robert, I don't know if you saw, there's a bunch of people that have gone to the Tennessee Capitol. Have you seen this? What do you know about it?
I'm from Tennessee, got a lot of friends in Tennessee, and they wouldn't do that in a lot of county capitals across the state. They would do it in the state capital because that's Nashville, that's trying to emulate itself on being the next Austin, Texas, unfortunately. Someone should run for mayor there on a platform of purging the commies that are trying to take over the city. But basically, this is just David Hogg, AstroTurf, getting a bunch of young kids to believe something that's utter nonsense and taking sort of left-wing activism. It's fascinating how when the left takes over a capital,
yep,
it's part of democracy. But if somebody on the right simply walks in following security guards, they end up in a gulag in D.C. So the extraordinary contradiction, living contradiction of how people are treated based on their method of protest continues to show up on a day-to-day basis. And this is just the latest iteration of it.
Yeah, we have a video here of a bunch of teenagers actually pushing police officers and struggling with them and assaulting police officers. I don't think they're going to be put into solitary confinement, put into a gulag, have a special committee impaneled and having the entire FBI go after them. I venture a guess the FBI will do nothing now that the Nashville State Capitol is being stormed. We're going to keep an eye on that. So, Robert, I want to ask you about the Restrict Act. It's amazing to me how little coverage this has received. I don't like TikTok. TikTok is garbage. It's terrible. It's awful. It's an indefensible application. But where I'm at currently, I do not think there is a way to ban TikTok without also making the beast more powerful than ever. That's a sad reality, but you got to live in reality. Robert, talk about the constitutionality or the unconstitutionality of the Restrict Act.
The Restrict Act is simply Patriot Act 2.0 disguised as an effort to regulate and restrict TikTok in China that has very little to do with TikTok or China and will instead criminalize the ability of ordinary everyday Americans to independently access the sources they want online. It even has a provision for 20 years in federal prison if you use a VPN. People use VPNs to protect their anonymity. People use VPNs to be able to access servers and around the world of various independent news sites. People in China use VPNs to be able to get outside the Chinese system. We're basically imposing our answer to China's TikTok is to impose China's system of global surveillance on our own domestic population and limitation on internet access. That's exactly the wrong approach, is to replicate the Chinese approach. If they're serious about punishing and limiting TikTok, there is a constitutional way to do so. Simply allow ordinary Americans to sue the Chinese government, which has all kinds of resources in the United States, including buying up a lot of farmland, to sue the Chinese government for invading privacy, for trying to do all this social political harm on our young people, including inducing suicides and all kinds of horrific things that that TikTok has already been sued for doing in different capacities. But right now, under U.S. law, you can't sue the Chinese government for it. That doesn't make any sense. Wow. So what we should do is empower ordinary juries to be able to hold the Chinese government responsible for their illicit activity, not replicate the Chinese model with the Restrict Act by restricting Americans' freedoms and Americans' liberties.
Okay, a Trump indictment, it seems as to have been delayed a month from now. Robert, you're a lawyer. What's going on here? What do we know, and what do you think is actually happening?
Two different things. They're trying to flip other people. They're trying to get other people to falsely testify against Trump on something above and beyond the Stormy Daniels case. The problem with the Stormy Daniels case is, first, Trump committed no crime. You're allowed to contribute however much you want to your own campaign, if that's the allegation, when the evidence is that it had nothing to do with the campaign. It's not like people didn't know that Trump was Trump in certain respects. He wasn't running for pastor or Sunday school teacher. Mm-hmm. He was running for president, as Jerry Falwell long described about Ronald Reagan, who also didn't have necessarily a perfect, ideal personal life in some respects. And so there is no crime there. And that's problem one. Problem two is, of course, violates statute of limitations. Problem three is, it appears the prosecutor violated due process rules in what was allowed to be presented to the grand jury. So my guess is he is second guessing his own decision to move forward. Trump did a good job saying, look, this nut job wants to indict me. And that caused a public backlash that led the prosecutor to second guess his own actions, because the professionals in his own office, a bunch of lefties, by the way, said, hold on a second, this looks a little insane even for us. So my guess is he's searching and seeking for something else, some little tax charge, something else he can tag on, even though there'll be no factual grounds for it, no legal basis for it, a clear political weaponization in violation of the selective prosecution prohibitions of the Constitution. It's not going to stop him, because the left is so absorbed with the idea of indicting Trump. Trump's enemies are so absorbed with the idea of indicting Trump. And this is a George Soros appointed DA, and Soros has said Trump is his number one adversary. An enemy. And so I think that they are obsessed with indicting him. The problem is he committed no crime. I mean, Trump has to be one of the most innocent politicians in the history of America.
No, not even that. No, let's go even deeper. One of the most innocent New York City real estate developers. I mean, you're trying to tell me any New York City real estate developer with 40 years of business examined with this scrutiny, you're not going to be able to, you'll find a lot. I mean, that is open season. And the best they have is a payment to Stormy Daniels that Michael Cohen actually did, was not reimbursed for, that is against no New York law. This guy's as clean as a whistle.
Completely. I mean, he's gone through every form of full body cavity audit that you possibly could. And you're right. I mean, to survive in New York, I mean, the folks who controlled the construction industry for a long time in New York, and they controlled certain other industries in New York,
right,
were kind of difficult people to deal with. And yet Trump somehow managed to do so.
Yep.
He managed to do it legally. He managed to deal with it and do everything legally. To deal with New York City politicians, some of the most corrupt politicians in the world, it just shows how clean he is. And that's why they have to manufacture crimes against him. You know, the old Berea principle to Stalin, show me the man, I find you the crime. Well, they've been trying to find the crime on Trump now for a decade, and they can't find any.
And boy, have they tried their best. And so going into the Georgia case, what do you think the chances are that Trump gets indicted in Georgia or the DOJ? What are your thoughts?
I think the DOJ case is already weak. It was but made weaker when Biden was exposed to have actually committed issues, crimes with classified conduct as a vice president and senator, because he did not have declassification authority, unlike President Trump, who did. So the Mar-a-Lago case was always bogus. It was more show and theater than substance. And I think they know there's nothing there. They also know there's nothing there connected to January 6th. They couldn't get anybody to even fabricate or falsify testimony. They went after Steve Bannon. He refused to falsify or fabricate anything against the president. So I think they know that case is DOA. And in the Georgia case, they had a complete lunatic. Even Anderson Cooper admitted she was a lunatic running the grand jury.
The witch. Yeah, the Wiccan. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, openly. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's so crazy. It's stuff that if you put in a book, people would think you're just fictional. It's fabricated. But no, you have an actual wicked witch of the West in the grand jury chair in Georgia. How do you let a case go forward with that nut? And I represented the president in Georgia. He did nothing wrong at all in Georgia. He asserted his constitutional rights and remedies, which was his prerogative and his principled role to do as president of the United States. So they don't have a case. The only question is, does a prosecutor that's so politicized bring a fake case instead? Even the media's own polls show that most Americans would reject it as being a politically motivated prosecution. So this continued effort to persecute the president, which is really an effort to go after his base of support, to go after them through him, to silence them by silencing him, has never worked with Trump, and it's not going to work ultimately, but it doesn't mean we don't all have more legal headaches to deal with in the interim.
Mm-hmm. Robert Barnes, check out his Locals. What is the tag for your Locals?
Oh, sure. VivaBarnesLaw.locals.com.
Very good. Robert, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Look, Americans have had it. They're done supporting companies that rake in hundreds of millions of dollars, sometimes billions of dollars, while trashing the country that made their success possible. Until recently, we had to take it, but companies like Patriot Mobile are building a whole new economy, one which embraces the values that made America the greatest nation on earth. Look, Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. Look, they offer dependable coverage for all three major networks, and they offer you a performance coverage guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you could switch to a different network for free without changing carriers. All this, plus the knowledge that you're supporting free speech, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching awfully easy. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call them today at 878-PATRIOT. Make the switch. It's no new money out of your budget. In fact, it will save you money. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie. That is patriotmobile.com/Charlie. Get free activation today with the offer code Charlie. We need to stand together and support companies that share our values. patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 878-PATRIOT. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie. So currently, you're going to see more and more footage of this, I'm sure, and we have it to play in a second. It seems to be a group of high school kids, again, who are just proxies of the regime, who are told that their purpose in life should be activist, be an activist, very unfulfilling life, have stormed the Nashville state capitol, this Tennessee state capitol, I should say, and basically have started to push back police, have started to push back the troopers there. Let's go 94 of them shoving cops. Play cut 94. I mean, they're pushing pretty hard. Is there going to be a dragnet to arrest all of them? Is there going to be a mass gulag campaign to put high schoolers for being insurrectionists? Will the media care? 95 shows the high school students staging an insurrection in Tennessee. You know, over 1,000 people have been arrested or charged for January 6th. How many of these high school kids are going to be charged with unlawful entry, unlawful occupation, assaulting police officers, harassment? Anybody? Will the FBI, will Merrick Garland go and do a massive dragnet? No, Merrick Garland will probably do a drag show. Play cut 95.
No action, no peace. No action, no peace. No action, no peace. No action, no peace.
Yeah, I mean, they're acting like children because they are children, but they're being raised by adults who are also children, just screaming, enough is enough, do something. We're going to keep covering this story. I don't think the FBI is going to do anything anytime soon. I wanted to cover this. So we've been bashing the Restrict Act that gives all this power to the federal government via the Commerce Secretary, part of the federal government. So part of this is really disturbing because the Commerce Secretary has a lot of power as well. They also control the U.S. Census. New story out today shows that the U.S. Census Bureau, or the agency under the Secretary of Commerce, is debating whether or not to add a question to blacks of, are you a descendant of slaves? This is a precursor to reparations. And I am not a pessimist, but I want to be very clear that the pace that we're moving right now, you are going to live in a country where there is reparations. You're going to live in a country where white people are going to be forced to give money to black people for something you did not do, for something you are not connected to, just because you look like somebody who did something bad. So I have some very simple questions for the reparation crowd. Do white people get money because our ancestors, 600,000 of them, died in the Civil War so that blacks could be free? Do we get reparations for that? Number two, what if a child is half black or half white, or a person is half white or half black? Do they pay reparations to themselves? What about new blacks into the country? Nigerians, Haitians, people from Western Africa that have immigrated in that last 20 or 30 years. They have to pay reparations to other blacks that claim to be oppressed because their ancestors were slaves? How does one prove that they're descendants of slaves? So let me get this straight. It is evil and racist to ask a black to go show ID when you vote, but somehow you're going to be able to have a black show all of the paperwork that they're the descendant of slaves. So can't ask for voter ID, but somehow blacks are going to have to show that? Doesn't make any sense. So the U.S. government is considering asking blacks if their ancestors were slaves on the census, presumably to gather reparations data. So again, I'm going to ask these questions. What if your ancestors are slave owners or slaves? Do I get a rebate if my ancestors fought to free the slaves? Can you identify a descendant of slaves? Can you identify as a descendant of slaves? Why does that impact your own life? Don't you have agency and free will? They don't believe in free will, by the way. This is a question that just floored me the other day. We're going to talk about it in our AMA tomorrow, is that the left believes only in cause and effect. There's no free will. There's no agency. Everything you think you're doing, you're merely witnessing, and it's because of something that happened to you previously or prior. What if your ancestors are both slave owners and slaves? So Wall Street Journal News exclusive, U.S. considers asking black Americans on census if they are slave descendants. Yeah, reparations are coming really soon. It's an amazing quote. So they're doing this, they're trying to do this in San Francisco, and they're debating it. And it's just so incredible because they put this forward. And Reverend Tony Pierce said, after they agreed to $5 million for reparations, he said, where's the money? Where's the cash? Where's the check? He said, that money is not enough. We are quickly going into a set of policies where whites are going to have to pay money for something they did not do, for something their ancestors might not even done, because they look like the bad thing. It's going to happen very soon. This is CRT, DEI, white guilt in full force. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.